everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is a very happy, fired up, special show, special live stream as we break down last night's POTUS election that saw the triumphant return of Donald Trump, only to become the second president to win an election, become president, lose his reelection, and come back for a third time to win it all. And let's welcome my guest here, Mr. G. Mangani, who is joining us from the car. You know, G, unlike the rest of the people I know, said, "Damn it, William, I have a family I have to take care of." So, G, how you doing running the family?
Good. I mean, layman called us being in the car in the dark, but I call it my dark MAGA studio. So.
There you go, dark MAGA. And here she is. We welcome Miss Annette Ross. It looks like there was a time mix-up, everybody.
I'm so sorry.
Damn right you better be, just because you won your election last night. We have congrats to Ms. Annette Ross.
That's
right. Had her own election evening to win re-election to the Rancho Santa Fe board. How's it feel, you and Donald Trump, the big winners last night, Ms. Annette?
Well, I think I helped him in 2020, and I helped him again in 2024.
There you go, there you go. And off camera, we have our producer, Big John, who always chimes in. Let's hope his head doesn't explode with the Trumpster winning. Last night, he and I got into it a little bit between populism and voter fraud. But he brought up a good point on voter fraud. We're going to get to it. But before I forget, and he's brought it up before, and he's absolutely correct. He said, William, because as both Annette and G have been around for and I did a couple of voter fraud episodes when they weren't with the group, and I showed how voter fraud has been with us since the inception of this country. And he brought up a good point. You know, I think G and Annette, we were able to show with a lot of help from Mr. Jamie Miller, GOP insider and strategist, how it's literally next to impossible to prove voter fraud once that ballot is in the system. And that was validated just a few days ago when the Chinese national voted. They caught him. They stated they were going to bring up two charges against him. And when asked about the ballot, "Oh, we can't do anything about that. That's in the system, so it's going to count." You know, that in itself validated our belief. But Big John brought up a very good point last night in stating that but William, you know, he didn't say it, but he implied that he understood what we're talking about with the voter fraud. He's like, "Well, that's going to open up the door for the Alex Jones of the world and conspiracy theories." And I'm like, "Yeah, you're right. So if we go back to pen and paper, we avoid everything. And there is no conspiracy theory. There is no red flags, how I call it, you know, and we have legit free and fair elections." Because he was right on this point. I do want my guy to win, but I can accept the loss if I know it's a free and fair election. That's why I can't let go of 2020. And we're going to talk about that in a minute. But I wanted to bring that up because he brought up a very good point in the sense of the conspiracy theories. Because as we all know, conspiracy theories tend to doom whatever side presents it because it sounds so outlandish. The downside for us is a lot of these so-called conspiracy theories like the Russia hoax turned out not to be conspiracy theories. But that said, Mr. G, I want to give you and Annette the floor here. Give me your thoughts. You have a couple minutes here, free time, free flow. Is that however you want? I would not mind if you touched on the economy and how it affected the election, but give us your thoughts on the election. Then we'll go to Ms. Annette.
Yeah, the top two reasons why people voted was immigration and the economy. And I think they're inexorably linked because when you have illegal immigration, that's going to affect employment and wages. And in the end, I think a lot of people voted based on who they think can make the economy better. And in the last year and a half, people have been losing their full-time jobs and having to take two part-time jobs. And it looks like job creation, but really it's not. It's, yeah, you're creating two jobs, but you're working, you know, half the time in each of them or even less. So I think people came out in force for that reason. And, you know, I was watching the MSNBC because, you know, you kind of go – some of the insiders there have admitted that they're just the propaganda arm of the DNC. And Scarborough was saying that this is a misogyny of white men. Then Al Sharpton chimed in saying, "Well, this is also misogyny of Latin men and black men." And Joy Reid and the separate one was saying, well, the white women failed us. I mean, really, it's not about the messaging. It's about blaming other people for, you know, their body parts and their skin color. I mean, that's pathetic. It came down to the economy. They think Trump was the one to fix it.
I agree. Yeah. I think the economy, we're going to talk about that too, with some of the exit polling. So I was a little surprised at where some of these numbers were, but the economy was front and center. At the end of the day, I will always go to it till the day I die, even though he's become nothing but a bum as an analyst today. And that's James Carville. It's the economy, stupid. And that was never more so than now. What they're saying is, we don't care what you think about what is best for you, America. You better vote black if you're black. You better vote Democrat if you're black. You better vote Democrat if you're Latino. You better vote Democrat if you're a woman. You know, the only people allowed to vote for Republicans are white men because they're racist. That's kind of their message, you know. Miss Annette, give us your unvarnished thoughts on this election.
Well, what I love about what you said about free and fair elections and that we could accept whoever the winner is as long as we believe that it was fair is something I completely agree with. And I think the reason why a lot of Kamala supporters today are crying is because they know it was fair and their issues were not strong enough to have them. They actually believed that you saw their tears and their tears were sincere. And I know it was because they were really that much out of touch. There is a group of, they're out of touch with everyday, I don't even know if that's the right term, everyday Americans, but I will say I also had friends of mine in Pennsylvania who were also crying too, tears of joy, because they believe now that their life just got a little bit better. And they believe now, right, because they're not thinking about if someone can have the right pronoun. They're thinking about, can I make ends meet? Can I get food on the table? Can I work all these jobs and get home at night for my child? I mean, they're thinking logistically, how are they going to get it done to get the basics done for their family? So I think those people are crying tears of joy. I think Trump touched those people. I think they believe in him and they believe he's speaking to them. And it's not, I don't like the Messiah terms. There's a lot to digest. When you think of all the media that's come out, there's a lot to digest with Trump. I don't like all of the, you know, Messiah, you know, correlations to him. But what I will say that I do believe, one of the religious pieces that I do believe that just turn of the head when he missed that bullet, that God did spare him for a reason. I felt in that moment that he was going to win, actually. I'm like, he was spared somehow for something. And I believe that, you know, this is the time, like for such a time as this. So that is the piece of me that is religious, that, you know, agrees with those people and what they're seeing in him and their need for him and their need to, like, be in touch. And I think that I loved his speech last night. He did a great job. He was humble but exuberant. He gave, you know, Vance his moment. I think it felt like a family up there, and I thought that was really nice to see. I'm like, I would love to know those people. I'd love to be in that room with them tonight. You know, seriously, I really felt all of that. And he's like, oh, people thought that maybe Vance wasn't the guy, but I think he was, you know, with a big smile. So, like I said, there was a lot to digest in this last 24 hours and watching, you know, as Ben Shapiro would say, the leftist tears, you know, overfilling rivers of cups of water. But I think what happened is maybe they're having a realization today that they're a little bit out of touch.
I agree wholeheartedly. I thought, I'm not going to lie. When last night after Big John and I finished up with the Free For All, his libertarian podcast, I didn't think we'd have a decision that quickly. And G was still up because I saw a couple of what do they call it? I still want to say I saw a couple of tweets, but technically what, a couple of posts on X. Yeah. And I got scared when I want to say it was MSNBC. And they're not calling it. Fox had already called it, a couple of other minor.
I think it was CNN.
CNN. CNN. So the next thing you know, it's like, we're not going to call it. Yet they were talking as if Trump had won it and the future with the Trump presidency. And then guys, we've got the memory sticks coming in. Kamala's 110,000. There are 100,000 votes on here. It's a deep blue district. The memory sticks, they're bringing them in. So an hour and a half from now, about an hour from now, we should know. And I'm thinking, oh, my God. Are they trying to take this election again? He goes, we'll have those results for you shortly. Now, this is about 1:30 in the morning, our time. So it's about, right. And I thought it was taped. So I wanted to go, before I went to bed, I was so excited I wasn't sleepy yet. And so I'm like, let me see some of the taped comments as the results are coming in. So then I pop open X and I see this lady, she's a lawyer, former Democrat, now Republican, saying, you know, one of the networks says their heads are exploding right now and as they're live. And then I'm like, what she's saying sounds like what I'm watching. And I'm thinking I'm watching tape. Delay or because what I was doing is every time I would go to a commercial, I just get out and go check what other liberal show was on. So I was seeing them all. And then I realized, oh my God, these people are live. So I was like, I can't go to sleep, man. I might go to sleep, man. Trump's gonna, a water pipe is going to burst somewhere. But they came back an hour later and said there weren't, they literally said there weren't enough votes in those memory sticks and they awarded Wisconsin to Trump. It was Milwaukee. And you know, they refuse to name a winner until 6:30 Eastern time, I want to say, because it was about 3:30-ish when I went to bed about that time. So
William, you know what that is, though? You know what that is? It's PTSD from 2020.
Yes.
PTSD. Yes.
You wake up and all of a sudden everything's the other way and you're like, right. What the heck just happened?
Oh yeah, no, I agree. And okay, we're gonna go through it here. We're already jumping around. That's what kills them. So there were improved numbers in Black and Hispanic voters for President Trump or President-elect Trump. You know, particularly men, the exit polls, and we're gonna go through the exit polls. I've highlighted some key data there for us to dissect, but exit polls indicated that Trump received a higher percentage of votes from those two demographics compared to previous Republican candidates. And this shift, some are saying, suggests an evolving demographic appeal that could impact future elections. I say no. It can if the Republican Party chooses to do what needs to be done to keep this momentum moving forward. But Trump is why this momentum. Here's what people forget. You know, and it came out last week, and I think G even noted it in our last podcast. The View loved him. You know, they showed the video of The View in 2015, had to be president. Then they showed some video of Oprah, you know, and then they talked about, an analyst talked about before Trump officially ran, how when they talked about Trump running, Oprah would be the VP. And they loved him. You know, rappers wrote songs about wanting to be Trump because Trump was always about the – Trump – I'm not that's where the Black culture and I separate. I love my loud Panamanian Latino colors, but I'm not into the chains and the gold. And Trump is. You go into Trump's home in New York, and my friends are like, oh, my God, look at it. They love it. He related to them. They would write rap songs about him. He was in cameos and movies. He was beloved. And then he came down the elevator, and it changed. And the reason I'm bringing all that up is that past of Trump being beloved helped create his comeback. So now it's up to the Republican Party to follow what Trump did and begin changing these numbers and to go back to the pre-civil rights era where Blacks were voting Republican, because the Democrats had the greatest, to me, it's the greatest marketing campaign in the history of our country, how 60 to 70, 80% of Blacks voted Republican right before the civil rights era and before throughout our history. And the Democrats came and they flipped that. So the exit polling shows some of that happened. There was not voter fraud that I was afraid of. And for me, I always say it through red flags. However, as we talked about earlier in the program with the Chinese national, we proved once they get that ballot into the system, they caught 2,500 ballots. They stopped even though we still lost Virginia, they stopped the illegals, from being added to the rolls, which was something they had been doing since that law went into creation in 2008, but this time the DOJ put their nose where it didn't belong. So they were better mobilized. But I want to show this video here to the audience in regards to this is what happened. And think, you know, technically this is illegal. I don't think you're supposed to take pictures of yourself or your ballot or stuff like that. But with today's technological age, they do. And this is what happened in one of the polling places in terms of somebody trying to vote. He's trying to vote for Trump. Boom. He voted for Kamala. Now, that has happened in the past multiple times. Could it be a glitch? Yes. But it tends to happen one way. And to me, it's easy because the person can go and report it. But my issue with these machines is, okay, what happens after the vote? And somebody being able to go boom, 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 doing the working their little magic as that Finnish guy did on Patrick Bet-David and showed how he could hack into Dominion machines. You know, Big John brought up a point a month or so ago to me and says, yeah, but who's waiting out there? You know, who's going to be that close? I'm like, are you high? Yeah. If they want to cheat, somebody will be around that corner. Somebody will be there. These polling places, it's not like you have armed security and cameras everywhere. They're volunteers chatting with one another. It can't be done. So I was really worried about that in terms of one way, but it all appeared before the evening. Well, technically it was early morning, but a decision came through. Gee, your thoughts on the fact that voter fraud did not play, I don't want to say voter fraud, but the questions that would arise from potential voter fraud not being there this cycle, what do you attribute that to?
Well, so when you think back to 2020, everyone was pretty much mailed a ballot, right? So that doesn't mean that everyone received a ballot, everyone filled out the ballot, and everyone returned the ballot that the ballot was destined for. So, you know, you could conceivably commit fraud that way. So this time around, there was maybe 1/10, maybe 20% of 2020's mail-in ballots, 20% maybe was requested this time around. So whatever fraud could occur would be limited by how many were mailed out. Because if 1 million ballots were requested in the state and you got 2 million ballots back, you know something's wrong and something happened. And the ones committing the fraud would know that. So I mean, you're always going to have fraud, like you just said. And even with the Kennedy-Nixon election in 1960, they're saying there's some irregularities in Illinois, right?
Right.
But it's about how you can minimize that fraud. And I was watching Dan Bongino this morning, and he was a little cryptic, but he said that there was a method to the madness asking Republicans to vote early. And that because of that, it threw off the counting or the estimation of how many fraudulent ballots you would need on election day. So, you know, I thought that was interesting. I think all of that was minimized. I hope in the next few years, actually in the next year, that Trump and the Republicans, they can say, look, we need a national voter ID law for all states. Because right now only 35 states have voter ID laws. So
right now is the best time to pass that, G, because supposedly we're going to have control.
Right. Otherwise, it's going to be another 12 to 20 years before we even get a chance to do that again.
Ms. Annette, I want you to give me your thoughts, too, on that. But I want you to take a look at this chart.
Okay.
2012, Democrats right about 65-66. 2016, 65-66. This is millions and votes for the nation. In 2024, right about 65-66 million. In 2020, when all those voter mail-in ballots went out, look at that jump. I would not say it before, now I say it confidently. To me, there is no way Joe Biden, who was never beloved by black Americans, who was actually seen as being anti-black, got over 80 million votes, more votes than Obama, the first black president, more votes than Bill Clinton, the supposedly first black president. That's a joke for you, OC stuff there. And more votes than the first black female candidate for president in 2024. When you see that astronaut, and statistically you can call that an outlier. I'm in Louisville, and I'm like, all those red flags. And then looking at this election, how the Republicans were prepared much better to offset, potential issues. What are your thoughts when you see something like that blue, this graph here?
you can't justify it. I'm sorry, but I guess you, like you said, it could be an outlier, an anomaly, but there's just something about it that stands out and it speaks to some problem. I mean, it's that much of an outlier. You know what I mean? I don't know what the issue was, and I don't want to presume to know. I mean, I sort of think that I never had faith. I think like everybody else, I went to bed in 2020 and I woke up to a different reality and I could not believe it. And I felt something really suspicious had happened. And like you said,
you said it best, Annette, something suspicious. We can't sit there and say that's voter fraud because as Jamie said, once those mail-in ballots were in the system, there was no way to really prove it.
Right.
But that's, I think, suspicious. And the reason I bring this up now is we escaped it because we were prepared. But we tend to forget as time and distance, you know, separates us from the incident. And so I agree with G. They need to take advantage of doing something now.
Didn't I say that in one of our more recent podcasts where I was like, couldn't they, all the states, do the same thing and you guys chastise me?
No, you were talking in abortion law or something like
no.
that.
I was talking about all – no, with Jamie. I was saying – he was talking about how they do it in Florida.
Right. Well, okay, so what G said will never pass. Here's how it could pass. The only thing Congress could pass would be you have to have a voter ID law for any federal election because state elections are under the control of the state. But technically, every year, there's a – every 2 years, Congress – gets reelected. So it would be and they don't do separate polling. Like here's your state poll, here's your federal poll. It's always one. And they do that just for costs, you know? So even though it would be a voter ID law only for federal elections, it would encompass every election because to go vote, you'd have to show your voter ID. So that's what you call a loophole, I guess. You know, you could say maybe Big John knows a better word.
I don't know. John's saying an amendment. You couldn't do that without an amendment to the Constitution?
I don't know. Is that what he's saying?
Did you see that in the comments?
Oh, we got comments. Privacy amendment. They can't do that without a I don't know what they can't do. What are you saying, Big John? They can't do what without an amendment?
When do we have them on?
Change that.
I don't like to bring people out. There we go. When their camera's not shut down.
Sorry. Yeah, no, the Constitution, which is the whole reason Trump tried to overturn 2020, is that the Constitution reserves to the states the way they elect and the way they collect votes and the way they conduct their votes, which is how Trump was suing to overturn the slate of electors of each state. He was trying to get governors and state houses to do it in Arizona. But the Constitution leaves elections to the states, even the federal one, obviously, right? So
no, that's not true because when you start doing the jungle primaries in certain states, there's federal law. There's a certain thing to do with the federal election in our state.
There's federal law that dictates, or I don't know if it's a federal law or if it's a court ruling like that. That I'm not sure of. But basically, like you can't, like for example, a state can't pass a law that says only white people can vote.
Right.
The federal government would step in, but the federal government cannot force a state right now to require voter ID.
Sure, they can for a federal election. They can't for a state. That's a whole state.
I don't think
it is. Our jungle primary, there's certain limitations on it when it comes to a federal election. And it has to do, and I learned about it through the senators. I was like, well, hold on, aren't we a state? And I was referring to the jungle primary, and somebody astutely pointed out, no, they can't because this one's a federal one. It has to do with the two candidates, and I can't remember. But, John, right now the DOJ has control of certain states and their election process because supposedly they've done, as an example.
They were sued and they had a consent consent agreement or a judgment against them. That's different.
It's a loophole. The whole point is there's a way around it.
What I'm saying is I don't think there is, but I guess your point would be now's the time to try to pass a constitutional amendment to have a national voter ID.
I would sit there and just said I would pass a voter ID through Congress just to pertain to the federal elections because at the court level, you know, and I'm not a lawyer. I mean, this is where I wish we had Daniel Schmutter. Daniel Schmutter is one of John's college buddies. who has actually gone to the Supreme Court, if I'm correct, right, John?
Yeah, yeah. High school.
Yeah. So they would be able to go.
What's funny about that, though, is someone like Schmutter would argue against it because that's another move towards authoritarianism if you had a national ID for voting. So that's interesting because then if you don't do that, then you have to reserve it to each state to implement their own voter ID laws.
So
you're back to the state level, right? You couldn't do it nationally. Each state would have to implement it on their own, I think.
That's a good discussion to have in the next year. I hope Trump and the Republicans at least have the discussion and see what we can do because, you know, if you look at a map and I don't know if you've seen it, William, but if you look at the map of all the states of Kamala won, they're pretty much states without voter ID laws. And those states that have voter ID laws, even the non-photo voter ID laws, they mostly went for Trump. So I think that's interesting. So it's a conversation that I think we need to have.
Right. And I just looked it up, and it did sit there say, hey, go, there's something called the HAVA Act, but that's specific. And it did bring up a full-blown voter ID. There's constitutional questions. It's one of those kind of like the anchor baby. We come to assume anchor babies are citizens, but there's technically no law because nobody's wanted to challenge it. Anchor babies should not be allowed to be citizens. Yeah.
Well, here's the fun part for you guys, because I don't want to rain on your celebratory parade today, is that, now you have no excuses. At least for the next 2 years, Republicans control everything.
They did it like
they did in 2016. So
you're
right. You're 10 short in the House, but you're on the way to owning all.
Yes, correct.
Right. So let's put it this way. You guys now put up or shut up for baby Trump. Big Daddy Trump has to come through now for all your promises. Right. So
you're right, John. You are absolutely right. This is why I agree with John. 4 years ago or in 2020, the establishment was against Trump. They were doing as much as the Democrats to stymie Trump. Trump doesn't have that roadblock anymore. This election, I don't know if they conceded in any other states, but he's at like 299. To me, he gets hits 300. That's a mandate. And that's a mandate that's going to scare the hell out of congressmen on either party because they have to go up 2 years from now. So you're right, Big John. Trump can get past, and there is no McCain this go around, and McConnell is stepping down. So you're still always going to have to deal with the Rhino class, but this is a vulnerable moment that us conservatives need to jump on Trump to get done. Yeah. And what makes it hard, John, is Reelsville. Daryl Issa is my representative. Daryl Issa will vote conservative most of the time. But when it comes to that 20%, he doesn't. He's usually voting with the party. So it's like, how much will those politicians fight their own party? You know, and defense, the Democrats went through it with the AOCs of the world. That's what they've been batting. And that's what kind of results in
what you're going every to see cycle. You're right. What you're going to see, I think, is whether or not the more radical propositions that Trump and promises, rather, that he made, whether they're going to get enacted, whether the Republicans have the guts to put them through. Now, I'm not saying whether I agree or disagree with those policies, but when he said he's going to send the army out to deport illegal aliens, that's a radical move, right?
Right.
When you say you're going to end the Fed,
that's not a radical move. The media makes it radical. We got 10 million who came here illegally. To me, there's no radical. Get it out. But then the media always comes up.
Hey, William,
how are you going to get 10 million people out of here?
Hey, William, when's the last time in the U.S. that the army was deployed for action?
You don't have to do the army. We got something called ICE. That's
I'm saying that's what Donald Trump promised. Right?
Been done in the past. I think that has been done against Mexico.
Not for 10 million people. The only way you could get rid of 10 million people is but anyway, my point is the people that you're talking about, the Republicans that you're talking about, the rhinos or whatever, they're the ones who are going to have to, if Trump's agenda, if he actually meant it and he actually plans on carrying it through, that's where you guys will have to figure out whether who's on board or not.
And look at donor dollars and who the Chamber of Commerce, backed by the corporations, are supporting. Because, see, people don't realize the Chamber of Commerce is not the small business's friend, even though perception dictates it is. Those big corporations want that cheap labor, especially the restaurant and the agriculture industry. All right, Big John, we appreciate it there, sir. Sorry about that. But that's – oh, Big John, before – come on back. Tell us, how did the Mises people do? How did the Mises – the Mises caucus out of the Libertarian wing is the ones that tended to vote for Trump. How did that all play out? Any updates on
your – I'm sure they loved it because, you know, since they were –
No, the voting pattern. Any idea on the voting pattern, how it went?
Well, they all voted for Trump. Yeah, they all voted for Trump. It's obvious. They're all doing cartwheels thinking Trump's going to listen to them now. So,
well, actually, no, it's not about listening to them. It's about that appointment. That, to me, is the make or break.
It's not even that. In their mind, the number one issue is freeing Ross Ulbricht. That's their
issue. Oh, that's
right.
That's right.
That Trump promised them, quote-unquote. Day one, Ross will be free. So
let the audience know who Ross Ulbricht is, because you and I know about him, and G may know, but I'm not sure if Annette knows.
Ross Ulbricht was a young man. I think he was around 24, 25. He created a website called The Silk Road. And basically it was a libertarian free market, like an eBay for libertarians. You paid using – all transactions were done in Bitcoin. The browser you had to use to access it was an untraceable browser. It was an anonymous browser. It was a Tor browser. So basically it was a secure place for worldwide transactions. Ross publicly did not allow weaponry to be sold on there. He refused to deal with weapons. He allowed user amounts of weed to be sold there, and the rest of it was just, you know, typical.
It was the drugs that got him busted, and the government could not get it out of the pot.
What got him arrested was that it was alleged that the site was being used by, quote, hitmen. And what the government did is they came into court and said, this guy has hitmen, you know. But they never charged him with that. They just slandered it with it in front of the jury. So the jury got to hear it. But so the lawyers said, okay, well, if you're accusing him of this, why are there no charges? And no charges were ever brought against him on that. So basically they got him for money laundering or whatever. So this 25-year-old nonviolent kid is serving two life terms plus 40 years.
Wow.
For a nonviolent offense, right?
He kind of created the dark. He didn't create the dark web. The dark web kind of it's an entity that kind of self-created through the use of disguise IP addresses and things like that. But he was at the forefront of that, and it was one of those technicalities. Like, really, that's what you're going after it for? Technically, you may be right, but you're just going after him. It was what's the term that I use for Trump?
Prosecutorial discretion. Basically, they said, look, this guy – look, if you talk to the more hardcore libertarians, they'll tell you the reason the government made an example out of him was because the government didn't like being cut out of the action, right? Because it was Bitcoin. It was untraceable.
No, that's what I say.
And it was at a time before people understood crypto. Now, of course, the government – Trump is saying, we'll make the best crypto right here in America, whatever that means, right? So now they're embracing it. But back then, 7 years ago – They really trumped up charges on this kid. So anyway, that's been the big libertarian cause, right? It's like free Ross Ulbricht. It used to be free pardon Julian Assange, all that stuff. Well, Biden pardoned Julian Assange, but Ross Ulbricht is still in prison. Trump promised when he went to the Libertarian Convention, he said, you vote for me, I'll free him day one. Of course, you know, there's some factions that were going to vote for Trump anyway, but now they had the excuse to not support their own candidate. So when William is chiding me here, he's saying, like, what happened to those Mises guys? They won. They won. They voted for Trump.
No, I meant percentages. If there were any breakdown with the ex-voting.
No, there's no breakdown internally like that, but, like, the few people that were part of that, like, are all gloating now. So that's basically the people from New Hampshire, Colorado, Connecticut, you know, the more renegade state affiliates. So, but anyway – guys won. Go ahead,
is it the same idea then that if you like have an AT&T or a phone line, I mean, they can't get in trouble if I use the phone call for nefarious purposes, like you said, and hire hitman?
You know, it's funny you mention that because we had another case where there's these guys who created Backpage.com, that was a similar site here in the U.S. It was like a Craigslist back in the day, right? It was a help wanted site, services site, right? And Backpage.com was being used by sex workers to provide their services. Now, on the site itself, it was all code, right? Like erotic massage, $20, you know, call this number or whatever, right? Nothing illegal, but just, you know, the owners of that website were harassed for 7 years. The case has still not been adjudicated. 84 of the 130 or so cases have been dismissed, right? The rest of them come down to stupid, like if you accepted ad money, that's considered conspiracy, right? Because now you're accepting money to put an advertisement. So that guy committed suicide. One of the owners committed suicide over it because he was like, I've been fighting for 7 years. They've taken all my money. They've frozen my assets. And the second guy is still fighting. We had the journalist who's been covering it for 7 years.
Stephen Lemon,
we had him on, and he described it as well. So, Annette, it's funny because the argument that defense used is, then why isn't AT&T a part of a conspiracy charge when a mobster orders a hit over the phone?
Right.
Why aren't they held liable, you know? And, of course, the prosecution had no answer. It's classic government overreach. And they said they also used the Mann Act, which was – now I'm getting too deep into this. Sorry.
But yeah.
I'll let you guys go. But basically, it's happened before, Annette, to answer your question. And that was exactly the case they used. It's, well, why doesn't AT&T get in trouble when someone uses a phone, right? And the answer is they clearly shouldn't. But
so I should be a lawyer? No, I'm just joking.
You should. Maybe you should. Okay, guys, enjoy your Trump party. I know it's you're in for loads of fun right now.
Thanks.
All righty. So let's get to it then. Kamala. Poor campaign strategy and messaging is obviously you're hearing everything. At the end of the day, you're hearing they are criticized for failing to engage the diverse voter groups, ineffective messaging in terms of key voter concerns, like what's your policy, Kamala? She struggled to connect with the various levels of voters, whether they were moderate, independent. We'll break some of that down in the exit polling. Her word salad answers. Again, that goes back to her never giving a straight answer. Her gaffes, you know, I disagree, but one of the big ones that's going around is how she says she wouldn't have changed anything in terms of the past 4 years in regards to Biden. Her arrogance at times when she was questioned, you know, who the hell are you, man? Mm-hmm. I am a woman raised in a middle class family. I am an Indian. I mean, she didn't know who the hell she was, you know. So at the end of the day, Ms. Annette, what do you think caused her to lose this election?
Her inauthenticity. I don't think people found her to be believable. That's what I think it was.
What about you, G?
No, I think it does come down to that. I've always thought, and going back to when I really started following presidential campaigns, which was 2000, it's the who would I want to have a beer with poll, right? And you could just do that yourself. Just poll yourself and go, would I rather have a beer with Bush or Gore? Would I rather have a beer with Bush or Kerry? Obama or McCain? Obama or Romney? It always came down to Bush, Bush, Obama, Obama. And then it came to Trump. And then, you know, 2020 was an aberration. So, but yeah, I would rather have a beer with Trump than Hillary, and I'd rather have a beer with Trump rather than Kamala. But I do think like her inability, and this is comes down to the authenticity, her inability to articulate what she would do different also lent to, well, is she competent? Is she authentic? And then that whole authenticity part of, okay, well, definitely there's no question I will ban fracking on day one. And then she comes back and says, no, I will never ban fracking. And I thought she was being sincere about that because she knows politically that's a bad thing to do. But that's the only reason why she would, you know, be authentic about that. But it was in voters' mind. They didn't ever connect with what she would do. Like, what are you going to do when you get in the office? And then I disagree with you. I think it came down to that question asked on The View. How would you be different from Biden? And when she said, I really don't know and can't think of anything. She came back after that on every interview since then and said, I am not Joe Biden. That's how I would be different.
Right.
I'm not this old white guy. But that's what she was saying. I'm not this old white guy. I'm a younger woman of color. That's implicit in what she was saying. And I think that's why she was making the case to vote for her. And you notice back in 2008, Obama never said, hey, I'll be the first black president. He had all his surrogates say that. But he
never actually
said that. So that's what she never said as well. But she started to imply that. So I think, and that's right, it came down to the inauthenticity on her part.
I think it came down. The reason I don't put a lot of weight into that one specific is because we live in a fragmented society. 30 years ago, when it was just newspapers and your network TV, you could pin things down to one or two things. I mean, she's had so many gaffes. You know, I think there were people in Pennsylvania who go, really? You're going to ban fracking? I don't believe that for a minute. I think there are people who saw her word salad. This woman's an idiot. I think there were black Americans who said, she ain't black. Who the hell is this? You know, yada, yada, yada. So I think people had various reasons. I think what she wouldn't do, what she said was just a validation of what everybody was already figuring out, especially with the flip-flop. And then stealing Trump's, well, I'm not going to tax tips, or I'm going to be tougher on the border than Trump ever was. These problems started with Trump. So I think we're all right. And I think the best way to put it is how Ms. Annette, our newly reelected Rancho Santa Fe board member there, put it. Inauthenticity is the best word.
Well, you know, I love to give my anecdotal daughter stories, but I think there's something true to what my daughter said, because when she was upset about the loss, I said, well, what did you like about her?
Oh, what'd she say?
Well, she's like,
Dude, that didn't have an answer.
And she said, she's not Trump. I said, well, that's different than liking something about her. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Annette, all she did was stereotype women. For every man that goes, well, yeah, you know, women have a period once a month, they're all emotional or this or that. That answer validates that belief to men. Well, she's not Trump. Oh, feelings. Oh, my feelings are hurting. She's not Trump. That's why, you know, that's how people view individuals who vote that way. And it's come, and you hear from women all the time, not because they're women, but because we've had Hillary Clinton as a candidate previous, and then Kamala was the undercard with Biden. Then Kamala was the forefront. So the woman's voice has really come out. And to hear that, especially, that's another reason Trump took men. Men were tired of hearing that. Well, he's not Trump. Really? Is that how you make a decision? Is that how you're going to go deal with Vladimir Putin? Is that how you're going to deal with well, the rest of them are all wusses, you know.
It's not good enough. You know what I thought today, William, for a second? I mean, I had a moment, and obviously I was so celebratory and so happy, and I couldn't sleep. But I thought, it will be nice one day when we have a woman president. And I think one day we will. She wasn't the right one, and nor was Hillary Clinton, in my opinion. But I think, I do hope someone great at some point comes along, and we have a woman president. I do.
You know, and let me get your thought on this, because I had not looked at it from this perspective. I don't know if it was on radio or on television somewhere. They go, oh, it was on Patrick Beth David. They were talking about a woman, and it was a guy, obviously. He goes, look at Margaret Thatcher. Look at Golda Meir. And he could have mentioned the lady from Germany. What's her name? The long Angela Merkel. He didn't mention her. Yeah. He goes, look at those women. They're manly looking. And what he was saying, and I got exactly, I was like, well, then it hit me. It's like, oh my God, they are not the movie world leader. Beautiful, tough, or this. They're like, they could go toe to toe with men. There was no beauty on the outer. I'm just relaying what they were saying.
Yeah.
But it hit me like, what he was saying is, and then somebody else came on and said, you know, when they asked a woman, why would you be CEO? I couldn't remember who he said answered it. But the person who answered the woman says, why would you want to be CEO? That's an 80-hour work week. He goes, the greatest joy is being a mother, raising your kids. He goes, that's what every woman says. And he goes, yeah, you can do it, but why? You know, when you can bring so much greater impact into the world by doing things that women do. So I saw various points to it, and it made me, and to your question is, yes, there will be a woman one day as our leader. We men, contrary to what Democrats want to say, are I don't know what the term civilized enough, are cosmopolitan enough to understand strength is a woman's strength is just as great as men. We measure it differently, but there's no doubt about it. What they fail to realize is America did not think Hillary nor Kamala nor Geraldine Ferraro as a VP that brought Mondale. That was just a nightmare in and of itself. That none of those women were the woman they were looking for to lead this country. Because I look at Margaret Thatcher and I'm like, you go, girl. You know, it's like that was one. I mean, she broke the unions. She looked at those men and she rolled her sleeves up and she gave them the beating their mama never gave them. I mean, she was a tough woman. She had the nickname the Iron, Big John can help me out here, the Iron Lady or something like that, because you just did not mess with Margaret Thatcher. I loved her. I mean, it's like I looked at her and I admired her and I loved her. Maybe because I grew up with three women and a strong mother, and maybe I saw some of their aspects in her. But I love that woman, you know. And I've read about Golda Meir and how tough she was. And Big John told me a story about Golda Meir that during the '66 war, when they were all coming in from all sides, and she went to the U.S. for help. They go, "We're gonna stay out of this." And she goes, "Well, can you stay out of this? Then it's gonna be genocide. Because if we see Israel going down completely, everybody's going down," referring to the nukes they had. And then boom, they got the help from the U.S. So I mean, those are so. Yes, we believe a strong woman will eventually be elected. Those two women, Kamala Worth Salad Harris and Clinton, I married Bill, the writer's coattails, were not the women we wanted. You know. So anyway,
where is she now, Kamala? Does she even have a future in politics? I think she's done.
Well, let's get to it. Let's get to that topic. We'll jump on topic. Give us your thoughts. What do you think happens? Okay, emerging leaders and Kamala's future here. What do you see for the Democrat Party, Miss Annette?
I think she's done. I don't see her in any place in politics. She may just be on The View. I don't know. No, I mean, who's picking her up? Is she gonna run for a governor? Is she gonna come to California? I see her done in politics. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think No, I get that. Why do you see her done is the question.
Because I think G was right several episodes ago. They let it happen, William. They didn't fully support her, really. In some ways, they were okay with letting her falter. And she did not get some of the really good. I know she had a short time. They talked about that this morning on, you know, Mika Brzezinski. And the short amount of time she had to pull together this campaign, blah, 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 blah. So, like, it couldn't be done in the 3 months she had to do it. But I think the more people got to know her, the less they liked her. Thank goodness it was a short amount of time. It would have only gone worse for her. So I think that they're happy to see her right off into the sunset. As a matter of fact, when she walked off with her husband off the stage tonight, they sort of went slowly and like they were going off. I'm like, never going to see her again.
I agree, but here's where I'm going to push back against all those Democrats who said she did, not you, but the Democrats said she didn't have enough time. The woman ran for attorney general. She ran first about for San Francisco district attorney, then attorney general, then U.S. senator. She had three major races. She was not a newbie to this. So the excuse of too short a time is just that, an excuse. And as other Democrats have noted, and as you have just noted, Ms. Annette, had she been part of the primary system, she would not have made it this far, because that formula was already in place, put there by a strong woman, who I would not vote for because she's too much of Bernie Sanders ideologue, is Tulsi Gabbard. That, obviously, that's like where you bow down to the master. Ooh, Tulsi. She just like rolled up those sleeves. Come here, woman. Bam! Get Kamala out. You know, G, your thoughts. Okay, Annette, hold on. Real quick before we get to G, because G, I want you to ask the same question. If she's out, that's fine. Traditionally, the person who left standing runs that party until they determine their own future. That seems to not be the case with Kamala here. So who is the future with the Democrat Party right now? I don't want to say the future as in the facto, but who are the emerging faces?
Newsom.
There you go. That's an easy one.
I feel like he's just chomping at the bit, and he's just biding his time.
Okay. And then you can chime in here in a second. But, gee, you've been on the Newsom bandwagon as well. Yeah. Not in the sense you love it, but you agree with Annette. But, come on. Is he the right face? I mean, is he the right gender and the right color for what the Democrats want? Seriously. is he the right color or the right gender for what Democrats are demanding right now?
They push color and gender when that person's there, right? Otherwise, they push the person. So in 2020, I mean, they had a choice to in the primary to choose Kamala. They had Cory Booker. They had Tulsi Gabbard at the time. I mean, they had gender and color options of all kinds, and then they went with this really old white pasty zombie, right? So right. I think what in the end comes down to is they want people who will win. And, you know, going back to Kamala, so I know Harmeet Dhillon, and I think a lot of people know who she is. She's known Kamala for a long time, I believe 20, 30 years at least. And she said Kamala's lazy. And that's not going to win elections. I mean, if you think of all the elections she has won, they've been in this deep blue state where she has to put very little effort. She knows the power players, and she works her way to the top and gets on the ballot, and then it's an easy win. So, you know, Kamala did have 107 days or however many it was. I think it was 107, 106. No, she had 3.5 years. She should have started advocating for herself and building that 3.5 years ago, getting out there. And, you know, she had a lot of flubs back then, and she should have learned from it, worked on it, gone back to Biden and said, okay, I worked on my public speaking, put me out there again, and worked on her brand, but she didn't. And so then she was really left the 107 days to introduce herself. And like Annette said, the more they saw her, the more they didn't like her. So I don't see her winning anything. People are floating California governor since Newsom is termed out. I don't see her coming here.
Let's do this. We are going to do a round robin elimination here. If you both agree, I'll highlight him. They'll make it to the next round. We're having fun this episode, people.
Okay.
So I'm going to say the name. You guys say yay, nay. No explanation. Just say yay, nay. Pete Buttigieg.
No.
For 2028?
Yeah, for 2028.
Yay.
Nay. So nay, both of you nay. Okay.
AOC. Whether he's going to try to move forward or
I'm talking about becoming the next leader, the ones who the camera always goes to, the one who becomes a candidate for, say, House Minority or Majority Leader, one who can be a candidate for POTUS. It's not somebody like ISA who's a senior person, but he has no relevance in the terms of what we're talking about, you know, taking the next step. All right, so Pete Buttigieg, Annette.
No.
Yay.
All right.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Unless it's two of you agree, they're out. So the first no, we're moving on. AOC or G?
No.
All right. She's out. Gretchen Whitmer. Annette.
Yes.
Yes.
G.
Yeah.
All right. Ralph Warnock. He's a senator from Georgia. Annette.
I don't know him.
All right. G.
No, I don't know.
Okay. Cory Booker. G.
He flamed out last time. I don't
think
so.
He did.
Okay. Ro Khanna, he's a U.S. Representative here in California. Actually, he's always on Fox. Annette?
No.
Not enough names.
Right, that's it. So those are the names that I wrote down. There's other names out there. But so we have Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer. There's a lot of white people there we just talked about, huh?
Well, no. obviously, they have a weak bench right now.
Yes. I agree. Yet on the newscast, we Democrats, we got a strong young bench. In their defense, Bill Clinton came out of nowhere. Trump came out of nowhere in terms of actual serious candidates. Pete Buttigieg came out of nowhere to become relevant. As you know, not necessarily.
But you forgot three names. Three names.
Who?
One is obscure. Roy Cooper from North Carolina, who's
the
governor.
He's a Republican. Roy Cooper, the governor, yeah.
No,
oh,
he's a Democrat.
Pennsylvania guy.
Yeah, the governor.
Josh Shapiro.
Yeah.
Okay, so four. But then you're getting two big people. Two big people.
Who?
One person who was sent down to campaign for Kamala, and I think it was
Michelle Obama.
No, Hillary Clinton.
Oh,
she campaigned. No, she didn't want to run against Trump. She will be back. She will say, I can unite the party. And then the other one is Michelle Obama. But I don't think Obama really wants it.
You think Michelle could pull it off?
She could. She.
I don't think so. We don't know. We don't. No. Yeah. I said it would be one of those tough battles. But Obama, Obama is a complete and utter failure. And the reason I say that, I'm not saying because of what I believe in him, his economic policies, everything. He did nothing to put a dollar. So blacks don't have this great fond, look what this brother did for me. They don't. And they show that. And then Obama always chastises. The last two cycles, when he comes out, he's chastising blacks for not voting for the Democrat candidate, whether because she's not a woman. Well, because she's not a woman again. You know, so he's always chastising, and they've had enough of Obama. You know, and two things happen. You become fonder and your legacy grows, or people start to realize who and what you are. And so the jury's still out on Obama, but the more he puts his two cents in, the more people remember the bad. If he doesn't say a word between now and 4 years, they're more apt to remember Michelle more fondly than if Obama sticks his nose out again for the 2022. Here's the thing about Obama. He has one of the worst track records of endorsements. So Michelle does have a fighting chance, but she's not this unbeatable persona people assume. All right, so let's keep it going then.
Michelle comes off as really angry.
Michael has her own issues. I get it. I do get it.
Okay.
You know, but she's a strong speaker.
Yeah.
She can be eloquent. Her problem is like Kamala. She tries to portray where she came from, but she came from an upper middle class family. You know? And that's what a lot of blacks are having issues with Obama now. What are you talking about, bro? You're raised in freaking, you went to rich schools, raised by a mama with money there, a white woman there. You know, it's like, hell, even your buddies on the basketball team said you were cut, not because you weren't any, because you were black, because you just sucked. You know, so all these things come out. That's what one person said. Obama wasn't, because Obama tried to play the race card. Say he was cut because he's black. One of his teammates said, no, he sucked. When Glenn Beck beat you at a game of horse, you got problems. Yeah. All right. We'll actually leave it there because these names, I think out of the names mentioned, Hillary Clinton will be 81 the next cycle. She had medical issues that weren't, remember when she fell out, when she was walking her car? You know, she's not growing old healthy wise, I don't think. So that's, out of those names, Roy Cooper may have some future. Newsom, obviously, but I think Newsom will be exposed because California is just a shithole. And once that becomes known in the country and his track record, that's unheard of. So I think Josh Shapiro, Gretchen Whitmer, there's too much baggage there that we've only touched on in terms, because once you get to the national spotlight, all those stories that are touched on, they become full blown coverage. I think Josh Shapiro is probably the one person who at this point in time could rise to the top. And it came out today that Obama may have promised him, you're going to be our guy when the convention battle happens.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And that's why he turned,
Kamala down.
Kamala down is because remember, see, people forget Biden screwed it up when he came out hours after it came out. Biden's not going to endorse anybody. Then a few hours later, he endorsed Kamala and the writing was on the wall anyway. She's black. She's a woman and she's vice president. The latter being vice president kind of defaults her to the top of the list. So this whole convention battle, I'm like, that's going to hurt you guys. I was hoping it would come down to that because then we could exploit the democracy did die and it died in the Democrat Party. You know, the media was able to cover it up because she did not win one primary vote. So, but that story came out today and one of the, you know, everybody has a source right now the day after, but that Josh Shapiro may have said no because Obama promised it. Because they say Obama's bitter. He didn't want her in the first place. And that story was out there. That's why he didn't endorse right away. And he felt, and that's what it was. Hillary came out also and endorsed him and put Obama in a corner. You know, do I not endorse the first black woman running for president? You know?
But I think that's why Hillary endorsed so quickly. And I think the timeline was Biden endorsed Kamala within the hour of him resigning. And then an hour later after that, Hillary endorsed Kamala. Why would she do that so quickly? To block anyone else that would be good, to block any good candidate from winning in the open primary.
That's a good point.
Let her lose, and then now the party's in disarray, and who's roots in to fix everything?
Good
Hillary
point.
Clinton.
Good point, G.
No, they eat their own. They're ruthless. Yeah. That's right.
She would be great in one of those Indian detective stories. I love you. Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. By January, Hillary Clinton says, starts becoming more and more public. So just watch for that.
You would make a hell of a Detective D, though. That's a Chinese. I'm so freaking politically incorrect. I just say the Indian and the Chinese. I'm sure there's a white guy there somewhere you'd be good like to, you know. Detective Clouseau. Oh, he's French. I'm kidding. All right, real quick, give me a brief comment on this, because we're having fun, but we're at the hour mark. So I was thinking 90 minutes tonight because there was so much to talk about. So just give me your quick thoughts on here. Trump's New York criminal case, does it go away? And just to add fuel to the fire, what's her name, G?
Letitia?
Letitia came out and she was all like, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's coming, but we're ready for it. We're ready. You know, this is why I was elected. You know, so she's already defiant. Annette and G, if we start with G, do you think that New York criminal case goes away?
No, so it. I think Trump's going to beat it like Clinton beat all his, right, in the 90s regarding Monica Lewinsky. It's just going to be like, okay, now this is just a political witch hunt. Leave him alone. You've done this and that. And I think people are over it. And the voters have spoken resoundingly. Yeah. So
it's like,
I agree. And I wanted to ask you a question about that. Didn't I hear just tonight that they're backing off a little bit?
Yes, they are on the DOJ. We're going to get to that in a moment.
Sorry, I'm out of that.
There's three major cases. Right. One is the New York one. The other one's the Georgia one, and then the DOJ one. So the New York one, she is the one where she came out defiant, meaning she still wants to fight. She's like, no one is above the law. I'm like, really? You looked in the mirror, lady? Yeah.
I say let them go at it. Yeah.
All right. Georgia really is not much to talk about. I mean, talk about self-destructive. It's kind of like Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl at the 2-yard line throwing the pass and it gets intercepted. That's what Fannie Willis has done. You know, Fannie Willis and her lover there, chicka-down, is more important than actually prosecuting Trump. So that's kind of currently stalled. I think that completely dies. Yes or no, G?
Yeah, absolutely.
Agreed.
Annette?
Agreed.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so let's get to the DOJ one. Now, the DOJ, this was a big question. What is Jack Smith, who is not constitutionally appointed, going to do? Well, it turns out Jack Smith isn't going to do nothing because Jack Smith's bosses, they probably see the writing on the wall. I don't want Trump to come after me once he takes office, says, we're pulling Jack Smith back. They don't know how they're going to close it out, but they're already working towards closing it out. They're going to close it out just by not saying anything anymore, and it's just going away. That's G.
Yeah, I mean, that's to be expected because I don't know how pardoning yourself works. But, you know, we don't need to divide the country like this, going after a president. So I think they looked at that and said, this is a political loser. So,
and here's the other thing, G. Here's the other thing is Trump learned the first time the hard way. You know, whether it was Sessions recusing himself, whether it was who he appointed, he's not going to he may make a bigger mistake in avoiding that mistake, but he won't go down that road again. And I think the DOJ understands that this time. Ms. Annette, your thoughts. Right move by the DOJ sweeping this under the table, or do you think they're going to turn around and fight it?
Oh, no, they definitely seem like they want to wash their hands of this one, in my opinion. And they're already making the right move and trying to, like, just step back by, you know, dialing it back a little bit.
So. I think Trump did so well in saying and I thought the mugshot was great. That people hate to admit this. Oh, William, that's so racist. That's so this. No, I grew up in the South. I moved to the South from Panama. Over 65% of Black Americans still live in the South. A lot of my circle of friends were Black. And when Trump got arrested and got the mugshot, I had friends say, that's so wrong, but so cool. That's so cool. That's it's like, I'm down with, you know, it really elevated him. And people say, oh, that's wrong. It may be wrong because we shouldn't look at a culture that way, but the culture itself was looking at it that way. There's, you know, why is it popular when rap stars sing about killing cops and beating them up, doing whatever? It's an ugly way. It's an ugly truth. So I think Trump was just able to relate to all this, but most importantly, taking all the joking aside, when he would sit there and say, if they do it to me, they can do it to you. And that didn't strike hard with me. All that did was, I didn't think you're preaching the choir, but I think it struck a chord with a lot of Americans. And I think the DOJ sees this. All they're doing is allowing J.D. Vance to get elected in 2028. You know, by pursuing Trump now. Okay, let's have a little fun with this. And, you know, they did not use the term felon. Did you notice that a lot the last month? They did not. Maybe because Hunter Biden is a fucking felon. You know, maybe because Hunter Biden's a felon. Does Deputy pardon son? I think yes. I think there's no ifs, ands, or buts. The guy's senile already. He's going to die sooner than later. Not that I wish him death. I just think he's going to go away and slowly die, and his life is coming to an end. I think he screwed everything, the proverbial pooch, in every way since he became a senator. What's pardoning his son going to do to him? Nothing. I think Hunter gets pardoned. Missing that.
100%. And wait, but you know what? You made an interesting comment, though, there, William. And let me ask you when G answers.
Yeah, I would say pardoning him is just as effective as throwing him in jail. Like, the point gets across, and everyone knows, okay, he's a criminal, he's guilty, but just let him off, right?
That guy, you know, that guy has got some big cojones, and I don't mean literally because they got pictures of him in a nude, but he has done everything wrong in life and gotten away with it.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about some callous crap, the way he treats women. It's like they lie about Trump, about conservatives and this and that, and they won't say one damn thing about how Hunter Biden has treated. I mean, he even screwed the family over. His brother's foot is the grave is still moist, and down with Mrs. Bo Biden, you know, use an abuser, and you know that guy's gonna get away with everything, I think, because I think his father's gonna pardon him. Miss Annette, you said you had a question.
I was gonna say, I just wondered how you guys think history will treat Biden.
History, it doesn't matter what we say today. Because nobody saw how Christopher Columbus would be demagogued today because of what he did. So we don't know. But I think if all things equal, I think Obama nor Biden will be seen kindly. And it won't be because of who they are. It'll be their policies and how they weren't carried out. It'll be the turmoil within the country. You know, like with Trump's first term, he won't be remembered for what he did. He will be remembered for what the pandemic did. So situations create history in terms of what we remember. And that's my opinion. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, and I would say that he would be remembered similar to George H.W. Bush. Maybe, you know, getting past the pandemic, but then walked into a weak economy and maybe more like Jimmy Carter. I don't know. I mean, maybe not that bad. Maybe somewhere in the middle, but I mean, you know, the Democrats are saying, oh, you're the most wonderful president of top 10 or whatever. Like, that's delusional. I mean, I would say probably bottom 10, somewhere above Jimmy Carter.
I completely agree. I completely agree. All right, people, let's keep her moving on. Oh, before we get there, the meltdown of the media. One topic before we get to the exit polls. So, that, you know, this is terrible. Yeah, you know, I'm awake and then I'm starting to doze off, but it was like one meltdown after another. As I said, as I was watching TV, I have Hulu. So I would watch CNN and they go to commercial. I pop out, go to MSNBC, commercial, pop out, go to ABC. So I saw them all and they were all melting down. So when I went to look for clips, I really couldn't find good clips, but I did find one from a show I did not watch, The View.
Well, it would help if we could regulate.
Okay. I can't let this go. She says, think critically. She wishes kids would be taught to think critically. I think if kids knew how to think critically, Obama would not have been voted in twice. Hillary would have lost in a bigger number. George Bush would never have made it out of the primary. I think if we actually taught kids to critically think, we'd have a lot better candidates, and we'd have better quality candidates because the media couldn't demagogue them because people would be able to think critically and go, oh, I don't believe that shit, no. What's his policy? So the audacity of that swine right there saying that. All right, let's keep going. Sorry, I went on a rant. I had my liberal moment there. Sorry.
Well, it would help if we could regulate social media, because one of the biggest defenders is D.C. and Congress have not been able to do one thing in regard to the rogue corporations.
It's not
going to
get any better with Elon Musk now in the administration.
So let me get this straight. Donald Trump is a threat to democracy but they want to take our freedom of speech away, and that's not the – see, the audacity of these people. And again, if we talk critical thinking, people would hear her comments go, I'm not going to reserve them my 13-year-old comment, but it'd be, biatch, what the hell you think you're talking about over there? You know? Your thoughts on the swines from The View. And, yes, I do – I am being polite by calling them swine, not the word I really want to use. But that's I view them that way because a lot of women watch them, and they just flat out lie to them, in my opinion. Annette, your take on that.
Yeah, actually I thought they were going to be more crazy and unhinged than they were in some ways. Do you think that, G? I mean, how they can be at times. And so I thought they were a little bit more moderate than I've seen them act as we've come up into the election. And maybe they were just sobering up to the idea, and there's still a lot more venom and anger to come. I don't know what to make of. Let me just, I know this is anecdotal again, but I have to say something that I think it's mattered to me. It surprised me. We were running around the last week with Trump flags on our car. Do you know how many college kids were honking and waving at us? Kids. College kids. Woo! Like they'd see us like in a parking lot and put their hands up and start screaming. And I'm like, Bill, these are kids. Really, really surprised me. They were like, you know, so I think that, yeah, they're in touch with a certain amount of with some people, but there's a lot of people who feel a lot differently, and maybe just seeing our flags made them feel comfortable enough to let their views be known and to, you know, they made them feel safe, you know, like I can say it because they got the flags out.
Something happened over the last year. I don't know when, but there was a time where you could literally get beaten up and the cops would watch and chuckle. Not anymore now. And I think minorities helped propel this. I think it started with black men. They just started wearing the hat, the black rappers, the black gamers. I think sometimes I always tell people Americans are lazy, not because we're naturally lazy. We take things for granted. And here are not necessarily oppressed, but underrepresented or immigrants. It's like, I guess what I'm trying to say, sometimes it takes the outsider movement. You know, and I think that helped get it going to where you could do what you did. Real quick, G, I want you to add to the View comment, but also this is Mark Hamill. I'm not sure if you guys are aware, but
he's turned to the dark side.
Yes, he has the dark side. Biden, I am your father. Luke goes, yes, father. Yes, father. Kamala, you are my mother. Yes, Lord. Yeah. I mean, they brought him in. He's campaigning for them. And he hasn't posted anything on Twitter for the last 15 hours. But they've been hammering him. And I cannot help but laugh. Because, you know, the first three Star Wars movies are seen as the best. Canonic, you know, meaning it's everything. So This was a meme that was going around that people kept, they tagged his name, @MarkHamill, just over and over. I want to get, you don't have to get your thoughts. I just thought it was hilarious.
I haven't seen it.
Did you see that? You got to be a Star Wars fan to get it. The New Hope was the very first one. Yeah. Yeah. But I thought The Empire Strikes Back and the Biden image was this classic.
It's
it's a nerd to come up with this. And you know, by the time their eyes went to Return of the Jedi, their heads exploded in about as bloody as Trump's ear got. Boom. There's a list that of a, like 12 names. People bought and paid for by a Democrat Party that have not posted. And there's a list that's like way too long. It's literally this long of names of people who said they would leave the country in Trump. And then there was a bonus. I guess Rob Reiner said he put himself on fire and a couple of other dumb things like that. It's like, and bonus outrage. And they just said those. And I'm like, because, you know, these people, De Niro was another one on that list. But
they don't think before they post, for sure.
Exactly.
I want to piggyback on Annette's comment real quick. So if you think back to when Trump first got elected, these college students, they were like 12 years old, right? So that's when Trump was elected, and they probably have some fond memories of looking up to Trump, right? It's almost like as if I was looking at Reagan, and Reagan came back to life, and you can see the shirt that I'm wearing.
Oh, yeah.
And if there's a way to, like, if he ran, like, rose from the dead and ran, I mean, he would get 100% of the vote, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's like a fondness, and Trump got 50% of the youth vote. And I saw a meme of the four Ninja Turtles as little kids, and Trump was in the middle walking them, right, holding their hands. Two turtles on this side, two turtles on that side. And that was 2016. And then right below it was 2024, and Trump was this older guy with a cane, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are now adults, right? And they were holding him and walking forward with him, almost as if they were saying, look, we're going to carry you across the finish line, and you finish the work that you were here to do, right? And I think that meme is real for a lot of these younger people. But going back to The View, I thought it was interesting because I think The View probably had its highest viewership ever since it was created today.
Oh,
every conservative tuned in to see what they were going to say, right?
Yeah.
Including no, me. G, you're correct. I don't know if you're on X much today, but I know you're not on there a lot in it. But I've never seen this many posts. I can't wait to watch The View today. Can't wait to watch The View today. Can't wait to watch The View today.
So now, what I thought was interesting in Whoopi, and they were all holding it, right? They're just like, okay, we're just going to say, we're not going to cry. There's not going to be a cry fest. They must have had some roundup beforehand saying this is how we're going to approach this. And Whoopi said this really astounding statement. And this is, you know, from The View, the liberal view. She goes, we just tell you to vote. We don't tell you how to vote. We just tell you to go vote. And I'm like, you really don't tell people how to vote? Because everything you say on there, you make anyone who's conservative feel stupid and bigoted and racist. And so when you're talking about, okay, well, social media, they can't just go out there and say whatever they want because you need to have control over that. That's because the liberal view is losing control over women, right?
Correct.
Or its viewership, because now they don't have this monopoly on this is how you are supposed to think. Or think how you want, but if you think differently, you're racist, bigot, misogynist, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm glad we won, because I would have been really afraid of what free speech, how that would have been damaged if Kamala had won. Because she herself has even said Elon has lost the privilege to free speech.
Yeah.
Not the right, the privilege.
Right. And Tim Walters was just there. I was talking to Big John about it. I said, this is the first election where I do believe when people go, this is the most important election. I go, every election, they say that, and there's aspects of it. It's not that it's the end all there, but the aspect they're referring to lead up to the tipping point. And I believe because of what you just said, G, we were at that tipping point. The prosecutorial conduct towards Trump and these flaw, the political persecutions towards him. I think there were indicators that we are there now. And that's what I feared here. Now, money is money. I don't care how rich you are. Bette Midler is not Elon rich. She's not Trump rich. She's not Mark Cuban rich. She's wealthy, but she's rich. She has 2 million viewers. You know, she can monetize her X account. This is what she has done to her X account after Trump won. 2 million viewers. Come on, baby. Don't let the rose hit you on the ass. Maybe a thorn up that ass will hurt her.
I had to look up this. I saw this video today. She said she's starting the 4B movement or B4, and it's women. They basically don't get married. They don't entertain men. They don't have children. They don't. And she was cutting her hair. She's like, I'm done. I don't want to be attracted to men.
Yeah, there was somebody there.
Like,
well, I got news for you, Ben. You were never attracted to men. You had money. You had
like
money.
This self-destructive approach to, okay, Trump,
she's married,
so I
thought.
I'm going to hurt myself. I'm gonna be cutting my arm. I'm gonna cut my hair off. I'm gonna delete my Twitter account where I can make a lot of money. Like, how stupid.
Again, G, all they're doing is, see, I disagree with men who say that because I grew up with 3 strong women. But all they're doing is validating these men as those women are nuts, man. Look at them. They remind me of that guy in that movie Aliens when they're talking about fighting back in Bill Paxton. He goes, I got news for you, man. We just got our asses kicked. It's like those women whining. Oh, we just lost. Those guys are like, I got news for you. They are the prissy women we thought they were. You know, it's just so Miss Annette. These women need to watch your documentary that you said about sex and relationships, et cetera. Because you know how many women are on TikTok right now, young women? I'm not going to have sex for 4 years because of you men. not wanting and loving a woman. And I'm like, Pornhub is going, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. These men are just, the problem, there's a big problem with men and porn and these sex sites. I'm like, I do that. I mean, you're missing out, but you really are screwing us men over. But Pornhub is happy. Pornhub's like, I'm trying to think, what do they call it?
Pornhub or OnlyFans, they're making bank. But you know what? At some point we should talk, we probably don't want to have like a show and talk about actual sex, but it's a sad state of affairs, you know, for human beings. The most simple and like natural thing in the world has just been, put into some DV. I don't even know what's happening actually, but I mean, I only know like, cause I get four young daughters giving me ideas of what's happening in the world of the dating world and men and the experiences that they're having. So I do have a little bit of insight. And,
I would love to have you and your daughters on the Red, White, and
Red. Oh, boy, that would be your most new show.
let me give the audience a plug here. I have a podcast of Red, White, and Rude. It's on pop culture. And I saw Annette's daughter, and I'm a marketer. I was like, oh, we got to bring her on. She's going to get us an audience. So I built a whole segment around conservative versus liberal women, built around her to give us her thoughts. And I'm really fascinated because I'm out of touch now. At my age, I'm an old fart. I'm married, you know. I may look young and I may think I'm cool, but man, I trip over my own 2 feet. Dude, she's hitting on you, huh? Really? I mean, that's how naive and dumb I was. And then when I thought I was slick, it's your classic comedy movie, you know, Jerry Lewis, you know. So I am really fascinated to hear her thoughts.
We were out, and you're going to love it, and we were out, me and G and a friend of ours and Bill and my daughter Natalie. And the one man was really awkward with Natalie, and guy our age, maybe a little bit older. And then, you know, Bill's her dad. But then when we left – when everyone left, actually, you don't have any girls, G, so I took it as a big compliment from my daughter. She's like, I really like G. He's normal, which is the best thing she could possibly say about you. She's like, he knew how to talk to me, Mom. He wasn't awkward. And I'm like, wow, he doesn't even have any, you know, daughters, you know, especially like her age. But I think that it was still, G, you could still talk at her level, where it wasn't weird for her, like she thought you were cool, and that is a huge compliment. I was like, wow, she felt you got, you know, I'm actually the harder one at times because I'm sort of like, I don't totally understand their world. But it is great though. It is great, William, to let them talk and just to listen to them talk about the world they live in terms of like dating and meeting, and how I was very excited because my daughter met. She had to go to D.C. She was there for D.C. for Election Day, and there was a guy on the plane who thought she was beautiful, big shock, right? And then said, can I have your number, and can I give you a call? And sometimes we have a drink or a cup of coffee or whatever. And she was really excited. She's like, because you know what, Mom? It wasn't like a – is it called Hinge? Wait, the dating app. Whatever it's called.
I have no
idea. It wasn't a dating app. It was someone.
Hey, aren't you on Grindr? Aren't you on Grindr?
No. That's a bad one, I feel like.
That's a gay one.
Okay. Anyway. Oh, gosh.
I'm thinking that you gays is G straight and married.
But it was just like a regular interaction with a 26-year-old guy with a 26-year-old girl, which was, she's like, Mom, that never happens. Where someone will just meet me and look me in the eye and talk to me and say, can I give you a call sometime? We can have a beer.
Yeah. You know, I noticed in my early 20s and in my mid 20s, dating was normal. Then when I came to the States after being overseas and I started dating and I dated a few liberal women, I'm like, what the hell's happening here? You know? I mean, I was on one date and within 30 seconds, I suspect both of us were like, waiting for the end. So I am really, because from what I've read, it really is the. So I've got off track, but I wanted to pump it up. So y'all, if y'all want to see a beautiful young woman ask her questions on how to date for you single men, tune in. Yeah. Yes. All righty. if she'll answer my damn text is back.
All right. I talked to her tonight. Okay.
All right. So let's
just
get
say I'm the guy from the plane, and she'll call you right back. Psych is blowing
up. I was on a plane once too, sitting next to a newscaster, and she asked for my number just because of the way I carried. Because when I was married and didn't care, you know, you're normal, you know. And I was acting normal, you know. So go ahead. Okay. So let's go into some of these exit poll numbers. This is exciting stuff to the audience. Key voter demographics. So Trump improved significantly among younger voters. See, this election was just topsy-turvy in terms of what tradition. And before I go on, I have to say this. Democrats are up. Well, we got to do an introspective. We got to know why we lost blacks, why we lost women. I go, you act as if you own them. You know, we know why you lost them. You lost them because you were telling them you better vote if you're black because of this. If you're a white woman because of this. It's like they're human beings. And Trump, that's why Trump won them, in my opinion, to make a long story short. Younger voters, 42% of the 18 to 29. That is up 35%. From 2020. People, 35%, you're like, well, that's not that much. Yeah, yeah, in the grand scheme of things, when you compare it to 100%. But in politics, that's like night and day. To have that big of an increase is beyond words. You, Miss Annette, have daughters in that age group.
Yep.
What are your thoughts when you see that number?
I know what it is. That they're tired of it. They're tired of pronouns. They're tired of being, they are. They're tired of that environment where they live in, where they are walking on eggshells. Do you know what that is like for kids? They,
you know, well, hold on. You have daughters. It's like, to me, it's like I always felt it's a man walking on eggshells. Don't yes. Women too?
No, but here's the thing. Obviously, my daughters who have male friends, the kids all come over for a party. I don't listen to everything they're talking about. When I say they're walking on eggshells, they don't even feel they can participate in an honest conversation in a classroom.
Because
do you know what I'm saying? So they're sick of it. It's just like it's all part of it for them. You know what I mean? They feel, and the men, the boys, I should say boys because they're boys to me, but men because they're getting.
No, I get it. We're all in the same boat.
They feel emasculated.
You're right in that. I believe that started in college with women's studies. I took three women's studies courses, not because I wanted to, but when you're working full time and you got to take those general courses and that class qualifies, you don't care what it is, you take it because it fits the time slot. I took three of them, and two of them, all the men walked on eggshells, and all the women hated me because I spoke the ugly truth. Okay. One example was when I was the only guy in the room who raised my hand. Who would not hire somebody if they were a women's studies major? I raised my hand. I wouldn't. And they're like, why? Why? I go, because I'm going to hire a business major before a women's studies major, because women's studies women tend to have issues, where a business person, at least they understand the concept of a business. I go, I don't work for myself. I don't work for feelings. I don't work to empower people. I do that with those that I hire for the business that's going to help the business. So that's where I believe it may have. I mean, that's one of the ways it started. Gee, when you see that number, 18 to 29, in terms of Trump capturing 35% more, 42% of the vote this go around, what goes through your mind? And you're an econ guy. That's see, like a good answer.
I mean, talking to Natalie, and that's daughter, she was bemoaning the fact that there aren't very many masculine men around. Right? And Trump exhibits that. And,
yes!
You know, you had Tim Walz on the other side and Doug Emhoff, Kamala's husband, and they're like, oh, this is the epitome of a masculine man. And I'm like looking at them, and Tim Walz is like gesticulating weirdly, and he looks like Elmer Fudd. And I'm like, this guy does not look masculine. So I think like the younger people, they're looking for a masculine role model. And at least on the men's side, and then the women probably want, like, you know, a masculine leader and a high testosterone person. So Trump gets shot in the head, and he stands up and goes, fight, fight, fight. And I even saw stand-up comics going, now that's strength right there.
And gee, I think that's a very good point. Well, there's this Asian woman we both know who lives in Iowa now who ran for school board and was destroyed. Very kind lady. And then you give me your thoughts. And I'm going to quote her. I've never forgotten this. So we were having she was having a glass of wine, and I was drinking a beer. And we were talking, and we came upon the term masculine. You know, amen. And she goes, William, sometimes a woman wants a man to just be a fucking man. That was a quote. And I think, gee, what you just said, and what, based on what Natty told you, I think that is lacking in our society with the emasculation of men. That's a very, 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 very good point. Okay, so speaking of women, a stark gender divide was evident with men. So I said speaking of women, but I meant men. But then we've been emasculating, so maybe it's one of the same today. So we said men strongly supported Trump. And women formed the core of Harris's base. On race, Trump made notable gains off the black male vote increased from 12 to 20% in 2024 overall. You know, Hispanic men, this is the big jump. This is where Democrats have completely stereotyped my brethren Latinos to their chagrin. Hispanic men supported Trump by 54%. To 45% for Kamala. That's a massive number. Just quick thoughts on it because I want to get into deeper in some of the more detailed. But in terms of the men supporting them, actually we kind of have already talked about that. Anything you want to add quickly before we go to something else on that, G?
No, I mean we've talked about it earlier. He won because he won more minorities.
I think so too. I think people are going to disagree, but I'm like, actually, I'm not going to say he won't because that. I'm going to say that contributed heavily to what is going to be a mandate. You know, once all this is said and done. So, Miss Annette, there, what are your thoughts here on the black vote increasing and the Hispanic men turning out for him like there's no other?
Yeah, I think this was a very. It was really exciting to see the men get involved in this way. I think it was the men who let Trump down in 2020, you know, and they came out in droves this time. And I think that part of it, I don't really know to speak to the Hispanic, but part of it, I do think listening to some of the men that Obama was shaming, they, you know, a lot of my daughters were even sending me like some TikToks. They were mad about that. They were like, hey, wait a minute. You're not going to tell us, Mr. Barack, you know, who I'm going to vote for and what did you do for me type of thing. So, I mean, I was sort of glad to see them to make it about who they – no, make it about real
issues. Yeah. I'm not – you don't do this. I'm not smiling at you. It's like when you say something, something clicks in, a story.
Yeah. No, I look on your face and I'm like, oh, my gosh. You know, they didn't want to be shamed and I thought that was good. But I think in general, men were – they showed up. And that was exciting to see that on the polls. And I'm glad because I think a lot of them are feeling left behind. White men too.
No, you're right. I agree.
I know some very educated boys, right? PhDs and MBAs. They can't get jobs because they don't fit.
Yeah. But then they're overeducated and the cost of college is an arm and a leg. Plus a degree today. It's much different than in the 50s and before when only a handful were truly the elite.
It was like
ones who got educated. Yeah. Yes, it was. Yeah. Now they're a dime a dozen. Now I smile because I have a friend of mine who's black from the South and we talk. And when this happened, we spoke. And I could just picture it because we're talking on the phone. The way his voice was, I could just picture his body language. Oh, man. The guy's killing us. It's like he's killing us, you know? Because there is a way. There is a machismo in black and Latino cultures that's different than in white American culture. We've kind of been civilized that out. Because I'll go back home to Panama and some of the things they'll say from a mass perspective, I'm like, oh, damn. Because, you know, we don't look at it from that angle. They look at it from a purely mother nature, I'm a man type angle, right or wrong. You know, okay, so let's get into this here real quick. The number one issue per this exit polling is the state of democracy. 33% of respondents identified this as their primary issue. Now, there's going to be some extra polling depending who did it, where this is going to change. And the economy was 30%. I view this as an outlier, the state of democracy at 33% in this election poll breakdown. But I just want to talk about it because the irony, as we just saw with The View, you know, the threat to our democracy. We can't hit social media platforms. Oh, no. You can't be saying what I don't want you to say. And yet, so I think this was one of those those Democrats are like, I told you to save democracy. I think it's Democrats don't realize, the person who was concerned about the state of democracy was looking at you, Mr. Democrat, as the threat to democracy. And I see that 33%. How do you think the voter looked at the state of democracy? Do you think they, what I'm trying to say is they did not fall for the Democrat lies that Trump was going to be an issue for the state of democracy, but that they were. I think the Democrats saw through their lies. Gee.
It's like these polls that came out before the election. They're sampling Democrat plus 10 samples and saying Kamala's up by 7%, which is not the electorate. It was R plus 2, right? So 2% more Republicans than Democrats. I wondered with this exit polling where they were asking these questions. I mean, was it in the heart of Atlanta and they threw out this idea and then it's mostly Democrats saying, oh, yeah. And that, I mean, if that was really the case and they're following this theory or lie by Kamala saying that Trump wants to eliminate our constitution and destroy our democracy, then she should have won. So I think it was just a sampling error somewhere.
Not every city
asking this or every rural county. It was like in one or two specific spots.
Yeah, and could you imagine asking them that question if Trump gets prosecuted? Trump's state of democracy. Every Latino and every black man will be like, what the hell are you talking about? The man, they're trying to take it down, man. That was me, you know? That was me a month ago. What are you talking about, lady? Yeah, and it's always the one, Annette, you are a white suburban woman. There's data. That is the enemy of us men, the white suburban woman. Thank you, Annette. Thank you. Right, let's move on here.
It's funny, funny how they played that reverse game, though, right? So.
Don't be trying to cover up, you white suburban woman. Now, all right, I'm just kidding. I'm just having fun.
My husband now, William.
Okay, so the economy, though, it was number two based off this exit poll, but for most every other one was number one. I agree. At the end of the day, my issue with my friends, family members, are people who don't live check to check. It's like you're freaking out of touch because you have no clue there are actual people, actual families worried about making rent, worried about being able to put food on the table for the next month. Worried about these issues, the economy, kitchen politics that term was not created out of nothing. It was for a reason. We are in a similar situation, at least here in California, as I remember in the 70s with fuel prices, food prices. It's people are now going, which bill do we not pay and we'll pay it on the third notice or we'll pay this one on the second notice or that. That's how people are living in many urban areas. So Kamala may have won the urban areas, but where Biden won by 10 points, she won by 3 to 5 points. So you saw that, you know, so I saw no issues with that. Immigration ranked high among voters. Now, you guys can comment on the immigration economy, but for Ms. Annette, abortion, while a significant issue, such as for your daughter, appeared to be less pivotal than in previous elections. And I think that's important because they knew Kamala was a weak opponent. They knew the only arrow in their quiver was abortion. And we saw that with every debate. We saw that when she was out on the stump field. If somebody tweeted, I am pro-choice and I believe in abortion, but I want to pay my bills more importantly. I'm voting Trump. I saw a tweet similar that said pretty much that. Your thoughts on the abortion issue? I mean, again, you two feel free to comment on the immigration and economy. Yeah. But I really like to hear your daughter's thoughts. Your thoughts on abortion.
Well, I think what they tried to do was play that up and make it seem like the people weren't going to have access whatsoever. Again, they used a lot of fear tactics. A lot of those things weren't happening. It's just back in the hands of the states. And there are still plenty of people who can access an abortion and can, you know, find a way to get the health, let's just say the health care that they need. So I think they really played it up and they tried to bring the saddest and the most disturbing stories they could find to front and center. And they did showcase a lot of those. But I think for most Americans, women, that is an important issue. I mean, our bodies and having the choice. Funny though, and they had the opposite when it was like you didn't want to have the COVID shot. Isn't it my body, my choice then too? But anyway, and that came up a lot, right? That it does, it is secondary if you can't eat. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you don't have shelter and you don't have food on the table, I mean, they're not as worried about that as you are about those basic necessities of day to day. So people, I think, I told you guys, I mean, I know again, it's anecdotal, but not really, that the two people that I knew, my daughter and a good friend of mine who were out in Pennsylvania doing the canvassing, said that the issue was the economy. People were tired of paying so much money for their eggs. You know, it was
right.
Life was becoming really increasingly difficult.
Exactly. No, I agree. I agree. Mr. G, what are your thoughts on those issues?
I think now that it's back in the States, it's going to be easier for the national candidates, Republican candidates, to win, because it's not so much of an issue at the national level. I mean, the Democrats will continue trying to do that, but it's back in the States. So it's going to make it harder for state assembly people to get elected, because now they got to really weigh in on whether you're pro-life or pro-choice. And that's going to matter to the voters of those states, right? Because now they're the ones who could change the laws there. So I think Kamala was pushing it, and then she misrepresented Trump's stance on it. Oh, he's going to push for a national ban.
Misrepresented.
It's like,
she lied.
He said that. Yeah. And it's like, that's a total lie. And I think most voters who like, okay, is Trump really doing that? I think people Google and they're like, what is Trump going to do about this? And they've seen, no, he's not. And I think at the debate, he even said, he's like, I'm not going to do anything like that. This is up to the states. That's where it should be. And everyone agrees.
Right.
So I don't
no,
think
I agree.
An issue.
Yeah. I agree. Okay. So let's dig into this deeply a bit here. Trump's share was, he was 8 percentage points up compared to 2020 in Hispanic women. Those Latinas, they love themselves some Trumps. So 8 percentage points. He garnered 38%. This is important. Then he was up 14 percentage points amongst men. I don't want to talk about the percentage of what he was up. I want to talk about what we talked about earlier. Trump brought these numbers up, not the Republican Party. Miss Annette, what does Trump have to do? Okay, look at that. I'm going to the white suburban woman to tell me about Hispanics. What the hell? I'm kidding. So, Miss Annette, seriously, though, what does the Republican Party have to do to continue this increase? Trajectory since 2016, the Hispanic vote has been trending up for Republicans, but it's been a direct result of Trump. What does the Republican Party still have to bring these people, to keep these people in and to keep it growing? Then, G.
Isn't that one you should be answering for me?
No, I know the answer. I'm the teacher here.
G, you have to go first on this one. I don't think I have an educated answer. I'm not really sure.
The question was again what?
Yeah, I tell you what. I'll take this one. You're right in there.
Okay. Yeah.
So as a Latino, I can tell you this. One, we're not monolithic. And to Black America, I don't mean you're monolithic across the board. But politically, the data proves you're monolithic. You vote Democrat. You have since the Civil Rights Act. It's the greatest job the Democrat Party did in marketing. Latinos aren't monolithic. We have Chinese Latinos. We have Arab Latinos. We have Jewish Latinos. We have a lot of Afro-Caribbean, meaning the mix. I have a lot of Afro-Caribbean looking relatives. So we are truly diverse. At the end of the day, you can go into a Latino household and see all three makeup. So what brings us together? Our education, our love of our culture, jobs, everything that brings the average American together. We're not into identity politics. So from 2016, when the economy started hitting this country hard, and Trump started talking about illegals, we didn't look at, what the hell are you talking about? That's my brother Latino. No, we looked at it like, dude, those guys are coming here taking jobs, taking our services, like in Springfield. That's how we look at it, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why we have been trending up, because we care more about the economy than we do at the fact that we're all one monolithic group, and we're not. So that's the answer. So we'll move on from that. And G's going to have to bolt here soon. So I apologize. And let's keep moving forward here. But in essence, to keep the Latino vote, just keep doing what Trump is doing. Talk about the economy. Talk about what America can do for opportunities. Black Americans will get this too. We just got to stop the hold that the Democrat and the education process has on Black Americans. And the data shows they've got a strong hold in that. Oh, that's where the indoctrination starts. Is in
that's school. My job on the school board, and geez, right?
That is correct. That is correct.
That absolutely is the job of the school board.
Yes, it is. In California, I think it's a part of the job of the school board is not to be afraid to defy the state when needed. The state does usurp your guys' power.
That you're right. You have to be. That's a fine line, right? You have to walk that fine line. That's right.
Exactly. Okay. 46 of your classic question: are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? 46% of voters nationwide said their family's financial situation was worse off.
Yep.
20% said, "Oh, we're doing good." I would imagine those 20% is probably in a different financial class. Your thoughts on that? Do you think? Well, let me put it this way: do you think the party as a whole should have been using that as a mantra more than what they did? I didn't hear it used much outside of Trump.
You mean the Democratic Party?
No, the Republican Party. They would use it as part of their quiver, as part of the arrows in their quiver. I thought it should have been one of the a bazooka, should have been part of the tank, should have been one of the main key campaign tactics for every campaign. Are you better off 4 years ago than you are today? No, you're worse off. So it's time for change.
Yeah, and that's why, I thought they could have driven that point home more, only because then you would make the connection of her being responsible for that. I mean, they didn't always remind you she is in office right now. She has been a part of something that's happening for 4 years, and things haven't gone so great. So sometimes I felt they missed opportunities there, and they focused more. They did focus more, in my opinion, often on the immigration problem. I felt like there were more, clips about that and more commercials about that, and I just feel like I heard more of that talk. Then they drove for most Americans that would probably say very easily, much harder times now, 4 years later.
I mean, Reagan used it to literally destroy Mondale, meaning, are you better off 4 years ago than you are today? Yes, you are better off with me, so keep me. And he did it for the exact opposite reasons, but he destroyed them. Right. Oh, real quick, G, the second exit polling company, 32% of voters nationwide said the economy mattered. 34% said it was a state of democracy. Shocking.
Wow.
Okay. So what are your thoughts, G, on
that was a bizarre. I mean, Trump hammered that a lot in his rallies. He kept saying, "Are you better off 4 years ago, or better off now than you were 4 years ago?" And I was actually a little surprised that Kamala didn't say, "Well, yes," because 4 years ago unemployment was at 7%, et cetera, right? Because they lied a lot about the state of the economy back then because of COVID. And she could have used truthful facts to portray it. But I think she knew she couldn't do that because
that's right.
People care about what's happening now, right?
That's
so
true.
They can say, okay, yeah, the car was in a ditch back then, but you got it out of the ditch, but it's still not going. We're still stuck on the side of the road. So I think she knew that. And so I think Trump hammered that home. And in the end, that's that and immigration won. Yeah. Like I said in the beginning of the show, immigration is tied to the economy because it's going to affect the price of things. It's going to affect inflation. It's going to affect our tax rates, the benefits that we get because they're taking our benefits, right?
I agree. There's no doubt about that. Okay, so let's close this out here. There's tons of other numbers. Real quick, I'm a little stunned at this one here real quick. 40% of voters nationwide said most undocumented immigrants should be deported. I believe that. I believe each case is unique, though. I was shocked that 56% said they should be offered a chance to apply for legal status. I think that's one of those you need to how the question was asked, what question specifically. Because, for example, DACA, I'm like, you put a gun to my head and just speculative, I would go, well, yeah, most DACA kids should probably stay here because they were born and raised here, Whereas, most – so that's a loaded question. So I was a little shocked at that. Here's one real quick. Your thoughts on this. How can the Republican Party grow on this? Let's be real quick about this. Dude, this is lightning round. The Democrat Party edge among independents decreased from 9 points in 2020 to 5 points, meaning they only had a 5-point edge. This cycle, Trump reduced that by 4 points, meaning he made headway with independents. Thoughts on that real quick. What do Republicans do to maintain that, to keep garnering those independents, or just your initial thoughts on it, Annette?
I guess my initial thoughts on the independents, would that be the libertarian vote, for example?
Well, people who don't claim to be Republican or Democrat or moderate, it's like the average Joe in the Navy doesn't follow politics. You know, it's an independent. You know.
But I think what they really care about is like things like freedom of speech and keeping the Constitution. And having a republic and, you know, salvaging our democracy. I mean, yes, of course, the obvious things like what you talked about with like keeping food on the table, the kitchen table politics, that's important too. But I think when it comes to independent voters, they want freedom. They want us to maintain their freedoms.
Exactly. I agree that. I guess how I would interpret what Annette said is they don't pay attention to jack squat, so they don't want the boat rocked. They take for granted their freedom. They take for granted the ability to put food on the table, to buy a home. They take all those things for granted. Once the boat starts to rock, then what's happening? You know? Gee, your thoughts.
Yeah, so if the Republican Party understands that a lot of Democrats are single-issue voters and a lot of independents are as well, everyone agrees on having a great economy. And that's one single issue that – if that's just hammered every single time that we're going to make the economy work for you, and that doesn't mean increase the tax rates on the rich people. That just means making the economy work, right? And making sure that corporations take care of their employees, which I think they need to do, without harming the free market and allowing the free employment of people. So I think that's a winning message. That's what Trump hammered really hard. And, you know, stay away from the social conservative things, even though I believe in a lot of them. Nationally, that doesn't work. I think that ends up alienating a lot of people who are single-issue voters. And they might say, right, I don't agree with that one thing because you're telling me how to live, which government shouldn't do. And then they bolt the party.
That's what I mean by don't rock the boat. Let them have, but we have to figure out a way to reach them though, to remind them, hey, you're not noticing anything wrong because of what I did for the economy. So they do still have to figure out how to get that message. Final question here, 3 points. The white vote came out. 71% of voters nationwide were white compared to 67%. I think that's a backlash from, to be quite frank, whites being shit on by Democrats for the last, since Obama. Everything has a breaking point. I tell that to society. You can't keep crapping on somebody before they start to push back. And with the economy going to crap, those whites who say independently thinking, we're like, whoa, what's up? What's happening here? Why are you hating on me? I said, what have I done? I've done nothing. You know, I'm going to go vote for the candidate who's going to bring normalcy back in. I'm not going to go vote for the candidate who's looking at everything based off skin color. So they turned out. Where the Democrats say they failed, but I don't think they failed. It's just they had offered no solutions. The black vote was down 2% in its entirety coming out the vote. And since the Democrats really do a hard push on that for their party, they were down for Kamala. The Latino vote overall was down by 1%. So these are not heavy, big numbers, but it shows to me the Democrats losing their hold on these minority classes, which to me they never own. The GOP just did a terrible job at messaging towards them. Your thoughts on those three numbers? Whites came out, blacks and Latinos were down by a percentage or two. G, start with you.
I think the higher turnout numbers with blacks would have been higher if it was a candidate that they felt like they could latch onto in terms of the Democrat candidate. Well, I mean, there's part – okay, so maybe genetically there's some – you know, black genes in her, but she didn't grow up with their lifestyle. She grew up with the Indian mom. I mean, I know what how she grew up because I grew up with the Indian mom. So I'm sitting there going, she's pretending to be like them. Like, I know I can't relate to that community. So I know she couldn't relate to that community because her dad wasn't around. So, you know, and I think a lot of black people saw that. I mean, you see these interviews in the black barbershops and they're like, you're not one of us. And that was like, I mean, that was pretty uniform, especially amongst the men. So, you know, a lot of them voted for Trump or they just decided, you know what, forget this. I don't want to wait in line and I got other things to do. So in terms of the white vote, I think they, like you said, they are tired of being demonized for every little thing and being told that they have privilege when they're living hand to mouth and they've got $20 left at the end of the week. And it's like, okay, that's – and they're sitting there going, what privilege do I have? Oh, when you go to Walmart, they don't turn away. Okay, but I'm still broke, right? So it's like they don't feel like they have privilege. So, I mean, if we can unify the country under, hey, let's all work together as Americans and not you're black, you're white, you're Latino, and you have this privilege when you don't, and start stereotyping people, I think that drives the turnout, right?
You know, you're right. And then that, before you answer, so I would tell my friend, I have this friend of mine who's black. We went to school together. We're still friends. They're friends since, oh my God, I'm 57 now. So almost 40 years. So we all talk openly and it just hit me just now. But I always tell him, like, yeah, Trump can pull it off. He's a billionaire who people look at as, hey, bro, we're locking on. Yeah. Well, you're living check to check. He's not, you know, but yet the person living check to check goes, you're my bro. Obama was able to do that with blacks. Yeah, brother, how you doing? But, you know, Obama was brought up with a white mother raising them and in Indonesia. So he was able to pull it off, whereas Kamala could not. And that's what I tell a lot of people who think they're Trump, you know, locally and this and that. I'm like, no, you're not Trump. There's only one Trump. Kamala wasn't able to pull it off. That said, Ms. Annette, you get a final word before I close the show out.
Yeah.
Whites turned out and blacks and Hispanics were down a bit. You as a white suburban mom, why?
Well, I guess I was going to just say, because it's sort of like if we're giving like sort of a closing thought, I don't think that Kamala knew who to be in this election.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
I feel like, and by not knowing who to be, like, who am I going to come out and be today and how am I going to be something for everybody, that she lost, like, any sort of way of like people connecting to who she was. So I think at the end, no one really had any sense for who she was. And that's very destabilizing for people. If you're going to you're putting your faith in someone when you make that vote. So if you really have
right.
You know, so I think those are just my, to wrap it up, maybe I can't answer your previous question, you know, any better than G, but when G was talking, I was thinking about her thinking like, I don't know if she knew who to be, and she kept on trying to be all things for all people. And that failed miserably, you know, because nobody really knew what they were hanging on to.
I think you're right. When we look at somebody, whether it's Obama, whether it's Trump, whether it's whoever, whether you're a leader or not, you at least want to be seen. You want to give the aura of, I know what I'm doing. You can have confidence in me. And you're absolutely correct. Annette, she did not give off that vibe at all. She gave off the vibe of she was somebody different depending on what audience she was talking to. She couldn't answer a simple question. Everything was choreographed, meaning her interviews were scripted, friendly territory. She did not, even Obama got interviewed by some unfriendly places, you know, but he was smart enough to know how to use the media in his favor, and he was smart enough to let the media play the race card to protect him. Kamala had none of that, or it didn't work at this point. And I predicted that. I said, look, when the first one comes, they get all the privilege. But then eventually, been there, done that. Been there, done that. That's how people started to look at it. And Kamala got caught in that. And combined that with being a bad candidate. We don't know, to the audience, we don't know what the future holds for Kamala. We don't know what the future holds for Trump. As Big John came on, he made a lot of promises. He's already broken one. He said that he would end the Ukraine-Russia war within 24 hours of getting elected. Well, it's 24 hours in a few more hours, so I'm being sarcastic. I'm like, y'all really going to hold him to that one? Yeah. But Russia already came out and said, hey, we're willing to work. Zelensky already called and said, let's talk. You know? So
right.
The fact that he got elected has already got the wheels moving, so that's something will happen. But there's a lot of questions going in. There's a lot of questions for the Democrat Party. What does their future hold? Who will become the face of the party? For the Republicans, how much can they get done? There is no excuse for not getting anything done. For the mainstream media, will you learn from this? Spoiler alert, no, they won't. New media saw the power they had through the podcast influencers. Lots of questions. We are going to dig at this again Friday. We are going to get into the California side of the politics Friday. For you California people and for you national people, how California goes is how the nation goes. California rejected a lot of Democrat philosophies despite electing Pencil Neck Adamship. So this could be a good show for Friday. Let me give a plug again for our Red, White, and Rude podcast coming up with Annette's beautiful daughter. You men who are single, whether you're 25 or 55, tune in. For the rest of y'all, you can find this podcast and others like it, including a great Big John's going to be cutting up his Libertarian podcast with some great sound bites, some great comments, some great conversations. Look for the free-for-all clips tomorrow. You can find that and our sports podcast at grumblingsmedia.com, as well as our social media outlets such as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora. I am William Del Pilar for Ms. Annette and Mr. G. This is Fired Up. And until Friday, we bid you adieu.